This is Ashley Hodge coming to you after Baylor's season is over. What did they end up at? 24-11? Is that right? 24-11. They had a loss to Clemson in the round of 32. That was disappointing. They were favored. Not a big favorite. You know, Clemson's a good team, but you'd love to have that game back. I think it's one if we played 10 times. Baylor probably wins that 7 times. Kendall, good to see you in Memphis. We had a lot of fun together, and you had to leave early, and that was end up being a wise choice. How are you doing?
Doing pretty well. Not the way, obviously, we wanted the season to end. I think we were kind of hoping for a better finish from Baylor a lot in that final game that wasn't great, but an opportunity to reset and with a program with a good NIL budget. Scott Drew's so locked in that Louisville bundled their coaching search horribly. I think Baylor's in a good spot to reform itself. And yeah, I don't think if you had told any Louisville fan when we were getting in the Twitter wars with them that they would hire the Charleston coach, they would have been like, okay, now you're just trolling. I'm going to block you.
Has that been official? Because I think. Yeah, it looks like it's trending that way, right? Because I think the coach in Indiana State turned him down.
Yeah, and I think it was one of those, like, Norlander said, oh, I'm hearing it's not official. And it's like, no, Norlander, you're a great guy. But if Goodman's reporting it, Porzello and Rothstein, that means they all just got the text before you.
Right.
And you're now being told it's not official by the official channels. You're messing it up here. So I also could see if you're Louisville and you're asking for official comment, they'll be like, we are not confirming anything publicly until we have gotten somebody at the press conference. So Louisville in shambles, Baylor, much better future than the Cardinals, but a future that's begun earlier than we wanted, Ashley.
Yeah, and Scott Drew and staff are hitting the portal hard right now. I think I put a post on Sikkim 365 Premium about this, and you can, if you're a premium member or want to know more information, give it a trial, and I think you'll get some good information out of that as to what Baylor's looking at. We can talk about, you know, some generalities, but we won't share specific names so much. You know, I think, you know, they're probably going to need to, you know, look for 3 starters in the portal. Would you agree with that, Kendall?
I think at least 3 starters, maybe 4.
Wow. Yeah, 4 would be a high number. I mean, as far as who you think will come back, I think I would say with confidence Jaden Nunn's going to be back and Langston Love's going to be back. You don't know what you're getting with Langston. I mean, he's had injury problems. So this is like, you know, 3 straight years that he's been riddled with injuries. So I do think you have to go into the portal not counting on him and looking at it, whatever he provides as bonus. But I do love the fact that, you know, Baylor's being loyal to him. He's being loyal to Baylor. If he's available, he's going to be a terrific player. And then Jaden Nunn, you know, had a up and down season, mostly positive. He was a starter the whole year, I believe. And he did some good things, had some great games. Didn't play well in the Clemson game. You know, kind of went out with a dud. I thought offensively for sure, and even defensively, I was a little disappointed that he wasn't as much of a lockdown defender as I expected. So hopefully you have a summer where he really, you know, improves and hits the weight room hard and you know, becomes more of that lockdown defender that you were hoping for, gets a little more consistent with his scoring output. You know, Kendall, I was watching that Clemson game. You know, I probably watched it 6 or 7 times, you know, since we've, you know, since it was over. I thought it might be a good use of our time to go through that play possession by possession. Does that sound good?
We can do that if you need to, Ashley.
I'm kidding. I didn't watch it once after the game was over. That would be brutal. I did, you know, catch a few highlights here and there. But, yeah, disappointing. You know, I thought, you know, just remembering what happened, I thought the defense wasn't really our issue. I thought we played okay defense. There's not much defense for a team that, you know, shoots great at the free throw line and makes double clutch, you know, 3-point shots at the buzzer at halftime. You know, I mean, we had some lapses on defense, but overall we did what we needed to do to win that game on the defensive end. The offense really let us down. Too many missed open shots. You know, obviously we know all about the free throw line and the 4 front end of 1-and-1s that we couldn't convert, leaving 8 points, you know, on the table there. You know, plus only making 62% of the actual free throws we took. And then, of course, the big 2 by Jacoby Walter. You know, Jacoby was terrific, I thought, overall. His efficiency numbers weren't great, but he was a competitor, played with tremendous motor, represented Baylor extremely well. You know, I heard the comment about he and Eve that they were, top 5 character kids that ever came to Baylor, just tremendous guys. You know, Eve, I'm assuming, is gone. I know Jacoby's gone. And I know, you know, Ray J. Dennis is definitely gone. Jonathan Chumba-Chachua is definitely gone. Jalen Bridges, I think he's gone, but I could see a situation where, you know, there's a really aggressive offer to him to stay another year. I mean, it's an interesting time. I mean, you look at the portal, it's exploding with, you know, great talent. I mean, I think Baylor's going to have, you know, really good players to choose from, but so are other schools. You know, it's just like basically the high majors are just plucking, you know, from the mid-major ranks, the best players, and almost every single mid-major player is entering the portal this year.
That's good. Yep. My kind of takeaway on this game is the defense was okay. And it was okay in the sense that I agree with your assessment, Ashley, that for what this Baylor team was, you couldn't be that upset with what the defense gave you overall. And then a lot of the easy runouts that Clemson got, both the obviously stupid three before halftime, and then the way Clemson hit some shots, weren't necessarily all the defense's fault compared to where it normally is. So about what you might have expected defensive-wise, if Baylor's offense hits more shots, Clemson probably doesn't score 1.09 points per possession. But even still, that's just such a high number to consistently ask Baylor to beat. And the challenge of this team offensively was just how hot and cold it got three-point shooting-wise. I mean, to go 6 of 24 to end the season from three, just really not good. I mean, Reggie Dennis was an absolute warrior for Baylor, but finished the season shooting 33% from three, goes 2 of 10 in his final game, had an 0 of 6 in the final game against Iowa State. Texas Tech lost 0 of 2. And I think I mentioned it on Twitter before the NCAA tournament, but on wins, Baylor shot 40% from three and losses 39% or 29%, excuse me, so an 11% differential. What are they shooting the final game of the season? 25% from three. So the streaky nature of Baylor's shooting was a problem for the team all season. Jaden Nunn had some series of games where he was just dominant from three. Then he has games where he can't really seem to find the ocean. Reggie Dennis wasn't quite the three-point shooter at the end of the season Baylor needed him to be. And so the three-point shooting probably needs to get better next season. And then I just think before they even adopt, okay, who do we want in the portal? Who do we need to bring back? And so I guess we can turn to that in a second. My assessment to answer that question you had, Ashley, about who will be back, I think Jaden's back. I would put that at 90% plus. You just never can be sure in this era, but I think he's back. I think Josh will be back. I know there are some people that think, well, was Baylor going to bring in a 30-minute-a-night center? I don't see that happening. I think they'll want to develop Josh. I think they'll think they can do a lot of switching with him. I also, to kind of take a step back, I'd like to see Baylor play a much more aggressive in-your-face defense. Baylor opened the season kind of trying to go the better version of Creighton route, or a little bit kind of like North Carolina would play, where Baylor to begin the season wanted to drop the big man against all pick and rolls, force the ball handler to shoot mid-range jumpers or take tough floaters, and thought the math worked out for that. But if you look at the kind of the top 10 defenses, like 7 or 8 of them play the Iowa State Houston style, in the sense of they get right on top of you and they just dare the refs to call fouls. And I think Baylor's got to get back to that identity of, I remember Greg Popovich in one NBA playoff game told his team, you know, we got to get nasty. And I think Baylor's got to get a lot tougher on the ball. And I don't think that's been there the last couple of seasons. So I think that's the number one fix for Baylor. And I wrote on the website that after the game, I think this staff should take great solace that you built so many great offenses and just think, if we can get guys that can shoot a little and really defend, we'll teach them how to do the rest. And I think that's where Baylor's kind of been missing the last couple of years. It's kind of fallen in love with, well, if this guy's a top 10 player with how great our staff is, we'll just turn them into basketball players. But I think it's really hard to turn guys that can't defend into defenders. There used to be that adage Zach Lowe would talk about. Is it, you get the 3-and-D guy, is it easier to teach somebody how to shoot, or is it easier to teach a shooter how to defend? I think we've learned the last couple of years, it's a lot easier to teach a pretty good shooter how to become a really good shooter, like Jalen Bridges became, and like some other guys became for Baylor, than it is the other way around, Davion Mitchell especially. And so I think they got to really take the mindset of, if it's 50-50 between two guys, go with the defensive guy. And I think that's where the kind of culture has to change defensively for Baylor going forward. That's just at least maybe my semi-hot take is, I think they really got to recruit a little bit more to defense, whether that means you pass on a few top 25 players, whether that means you pass on, this guy scored 5 more points at a lower level, I don't know, but I think the defense has to be more integral in recruiting.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think the key starts at the point guard position, and it doesn't necessarily need to be a point guard, but you need a guard that is going to be like Davion Mitchell and, you know, also James Akinjo. James Akinjo doesn't really get the credit he deserves for his on-the-ball defense. He was really good in that area. And if you could just really frustrate the other team's primary ball handler and make their life hell, which we know Davion Mitchell did, but James Akinjo did to some degree. You know, those 3 years, Baylor had top 25 defenses. And then, you know, the last 2 years with Flagler and Ray J. Dennis, you know, the defenses weren't nearly as efficient, you know, really bad last year and not much better this year. You know, 70th, the KenPom rank actually changed while we're talking here. It was 69 and now it's number 70. So
some
NIT game result maybe or whatever. But, you know, I think it's imperative to me to get somebody that can attack the ball. That's big. But, you know, you're talking about offense. Okay, number one, if you turn teams over and get some layups, that's pretty good offense. You know, you'll take that. You know, if you get some transition buckets, then, you know, that's you know, very efficient offense. And even if a guy can't shoot that well from three, if you can get 6 to 8 to 10 points in transition, that makes a big difference. You know, if you look back at the year, we one thing that really improved, you know, two areas that really improved this year was free throw, you know, attempts. We got to the free throw line a lot. We shot it okay, 74% on the year. You know, obviously not good in the final game. But rebounding I thought was good. Offensive rebounding, not your typical top 10 Baylor year, but the defensive rebounding was much better this year. A big emphasis on that. Ended up top 100. I can't remember the last time Baylor was top 100 in defensive rebounding efficiency. That's always been a weakness. But the turnovers were bad. You know, 214, according to KenPom, and turnover percentage on offense, number 170 on defense. So we were below average or, you know, average at best at creating turnovers. And we were, you know, below average at taking care of the basketball. So that's got to change. You know, that's I think, a big reason, you know, why we weren't as consistent as you would hope. Overall, a good season. I think we would all say that a Sweet 16 would make us feel much better about the you know, the overall arch of the season. It's disappointing to lose as a lower seed for the third straight year. And to your point, you know, freshmen, you know, Kentucky, it has an early exit again. They're pretty reliant on freshmen. Duke does make the Sweet 16. You know, it'd be interesting to see how they do against Houston. My hunch is that even though Houston's banged up, that they're going to throttle Duke pretty well in that game. And so that might be another argument against the, you know, the one and done philosophy. Rutgers is going all in on the one and dones this year. Rutgers has an interesting center that entered the portal, Clifford Omori, or I don't know how you pronounce his name exactly, but he's kind of what we need, you know, a 10 rebound guy, 3 blocks per game, dunks everything inside. That would be kind of the perfect, you know, big, you know, in my opinion, for what Baylor does. You know, so maybe his name has been tied to Baylor. So we'll see if Baylor's able to, you know, close the deal. It's a very competitive situation with him. There's a lot of good players in the portal. And I feel confident that, like you said, you know, Baylor will probably end up with 3, you know, starters coming from the portal. And we've got some good pieces there. I think Caleb Lohner might return. And, you know, Caleb, I really feel like his best position would be backup center. You know, I think he creates some mismatch opportunities on both ends of the court at center with his athleticism and quickness. And he sets good picks. He knows the Baylor system. You know, that would be a key, you know, guy to get back. You know, you got to get some continuity from year to year. Merrill Little's the one that is going to be interesting to see what he does. And then Josh is, I think, a transfer risk. If we do bring in a starting center like a Cliff Amore, then you could see, you know, Josh just, you know, want a different, you know, opportunity where he's going to get more playing time. But anyway, I trust these coaches. They got a plan. I'm sure they're going to be hitting the portal hard, trying to remake this roster here in the next 30 days.
I think so as well. And I mean, there are a lot of guys in the portal that obviously you can improve pretty quickly. I do think the defensive rebound thing, I've kind of felt like, because for years I actually had a good point when Baylor played zone, you either need to really defensive rebound or you got to turn people over. And that's where Baylor's defense struggled those last years, is they weren't elite in any category. So defensive rebounding finishes 89th. That's a massive improvement from Baylor's normal mark. But you look at Baylor's elite defenses, 2020 finishes 4th overall in efficiency, finishes 261 in defensive rebounding. 2021 ends up finishing 22nd. That's kind of a misnomer because of COVID. The COVID pause. Yeah. But they still finished 4th in turnovers, 274th in defensive rebounding. And then 2022 finishes 13th in defensive efficiency, 212th in defensive rebounding. And so I've sometimes felt like the reason Baylor defensive rebounded so well this year is they got blown by to the hoop a lot, or they had guys wide open. So it was like, well, there are more guys to rebound if the guys miss more easier shots. So yeah. I think Baylor's got to get back to the mindset of just, we're trying to turn people over and we're just going to dare the officials, call 30 fouls on us. And it did almost bite Houston against Aggie, but Houston still wins a ton of non-conference games. They still were able to beat Aggie with a walk-on playing at the end. And Iowa State going to the Sweet 16 with lesser talent than what Baylor's had in some of these years. So I think you got to get a lot more aggressive on defense. And I think the officials don't want to call fouls. And I think with the NBA's scoring burst being tampered by letting them grab more, I think in college they're going to let guys get away with grabbing a little bit more too. So I would really encourage a movement more toward that kind of style of play. And we'll see if Baylor goes back to that. I know it's really hard to say that. And heck, if it comes around next season, Baylor's got the number 70 offense and the number 10 defense, people are going to be like, why would you turn down one and dones? It's so easy.
Right.
Overreacted. So it's easy to play, hindsight bias with that. But I just really think that until the defensive side gets fixed, until kind of a shift in focus necessarily on this guy or that guy happens, it's tough. And when you mention the guys that you win or lose, it is sort of a philosophical thing where you can say, yeah, philosophically, we would love to shoot a million threes. Well, if you don't have three-point shooters, you can't shoot threes. Same deal here, where I think we all agree Baylor should get older. The question becomes, are the guys Baylor has to get older the guys you'd want to get older with, or do you punt on one more season and say, okay, let's portal a bunch of fourth and fifth year seniors, and then we'll decide the next season if we want more one and dones or if we want more continuity that next season. But I think you really do have to assess, do you see Josh Ojemudia as possibly your starting center? Do you see him as your definite starting center 2 years from now? And then do you think Miro Little and Rob Wright's not a name we've discussed yet, but do you think one of those two guys or Jaden Nunn could be the point guard that leads you to a top 25 offense? And I'm not sure where Baylor's going to assess that question. Ashley, you've talked about Rob Wright some. We've obviously discussed Miro on the podcast. What's your opinion on where you think Baylor will go in terms of bringing in a point guard or sticking with the group they have?
I think at the least they're going to bring in a strong combo guy that is a really good passer at the very least. You know, I think Rob's going to get a lot of minutes, and I hope Miro stays. I think he has point guard potential for sure, you know, but I just think that Scott Drew, knowing him, is probably not going to turn the keys over to a freshman right away. I mean, he may come in and shock us. I mean, you know, there have been guys that have done well as point guards in this league, you know, right out of the gate. Lipsy is obviously an example of that at Iowa State. And it would be awesome if he is that good, because then you've got a guy, you know, for a couple years, hopefully, that you can just build a championship team around, because that's such an important position, kind of like Houston did with Jamal Shedd. You know, I think that, you know, Rob Wright has that elite burst that you're looking for. I think he can, you know, he's going to be strong for a freshman, but there's a big difference between a senior or a junior that's been in a weight program for a couple years and a freshman from a strength perspective. And, you know, you were talking about free throw, you know, offense and, you know, like all these things that go into the defensive metrics. Like a perfect example, I mean, Houston let up, you know, a pretty nice number, you know, against Texas A&M, 1.19 points per possession. They send the Aggies to the free throw line 45 times, and the Aggies only make 65% of their free throws. But a lot of that is because you got tired legs when you play those guys. I mean, it's a street fight. The Aggies, you know, did pretty well for themselves, you know, entering the street fight and fighting back. But, you know, you go to the free throw line and your legs are tired. Everything's a grind, like it is against Iowa State and Houston and Kansas State and Cincinnati. I mean, there's you know, definitely programs in this league where it's like that. And then you make a lower percentage of your free throws. So, you know, it all works together. I do agree with you. I think we got to get back to that intense you know, style of play if we're going to compete for championships. And we had the formula. We just got to get back to that formula. And so to answer your question on the point guard situation, you know, I just think that, you know, Drew's not going to trust fully turning the keys over to a freshman. I think he's going to want to rely on a veteran guy that's proven it to come in and take some of that load off. And you could play two point guards. You know, that's definitely something I could see happening, you know, where, you know, Baylor, you know, uses Rob Wright or Miro, you know, or Jaden, or, you know, even Langston, if he's healthy, that, you know, those guys, you know, paired with an experienced guy that, you know, you have two guys that attack kind of like Butler and Mitchell were able to do, and even Teague, you know, that's a good formula to win. But you have to, you know, I think at least get one portal guy that's going to be the guy that you know you can rely on.
I think so too. And I think it'll, similar to what we talked about earlier, where it was, you know, philosophy versus what do you do, Ashley, I think it will really depend on who are the guys available.
Yep.
And if there is a guy available that you say, hey, this guy could be even better than Ray J was offensively and give you some defensive power, then you might say, okay, well, our philosophy was we want to get a little bit older, but 1 year this guy's worth saying we want to contend every season. And so I think that's kind of where it is, that I don't know if Baylor would ever say we want to just punt on a season and say, okay, we're going to be an 8 seed this year, or we're going to, you know it's going to have to get real lucky to make the second weekend in hopes that 1 or 2 years from now you could make win a national championship. But that's a really philosophical thing, because I think it's very tough to ever go into a season and just say, we know we're going to be worse this year, but we think the payoff is better in a year or two. And, you know, maybe you can't do that, because even with the transfer portal, if your guys are an 8 seed and then everybody starts asking when you lose 4 games in a row in February, well, what's going on here? What's going on here? Yeah. Why am I not getting more touches?
Right.
You know, losing can be get losing for a team. So it's tough to say, because I think it's tough to navigate it. I think ultimately, I think they're going to take a point guard. We'll see what they decide to do. But I think they'll find somebody they like, and I think they'll bring in a point guard. And then what guys decide to do from there, you know, open to interpretation. But I think they'll probably go into the year saying, we can play 3 or 4 guards at times. You can play Langston at power forward if he's healthy. You've got options to just bring in more bodies and then just try and keep as many guys as you want to. And then I don't really have a sense either if Caleb's coming back. Talked to him a few different times in the locker room. Didn't get a chance to ask him after the final game. Certainly went through senior day festivities. So we'll see if he decides to come back. And then we'll see if, you know, anybody else enters the portal that wants to get a little bit funky. I don't think Baylor would take an Eddie Lampkin or anything like that when we start naming some specific names. I think KJ Adams is staying at KU. So I guess we'll kind of see who Baylor adds in the portal. But I am real interested to see by like May, who does Baylor take in the portal? And then Baylor the last couple of years has gotten confident that they'll land somebody after the NBA draft. So we'll also see if Baylor takes a little bit of time to decide, hey, we may or may not do this, but we need to see who's left after the NBA draft to come in. So Baylor might wait for a guy or two after the NBA draft too.
Yeah. I mean, there's some good names in the portal, man. I think it's, the problem is, so to your, you know, comment earlier in developing a roster, I just don't know if you can do that now, like you could in the past. I don't know if this staff would take the risk of doing that. I think you have to look at, you know, hey, now it's free agency, NIL, we're being competitive there. Every year you got to try to put a championship product on the floor. And, you know, the portal, you know, you look at these names that are in the portal, and I just feel for these mid-major schools. I mean, they're just getting decimated. Like, you know, they're going to have to just, like, turn their roster over every year. And if you have a good player, he's probably going to the portal. You know, but you know, Baylor, if, you know, they could be significantly better than they were this year, and there may be teams that are a lot better on paper, you know, because of the talent level that's in the portal. You know, I think it's, you know, the rich are going to get richer. The Power Five, you know, 6 schools. Well, I guess the Pac-12 is going away. So the Power Five, you know, if you include the Big East in that mix, you know, that those schools are going to feast, and then all these mid-major conferences are going to get plucked, and they're going to have to, you know, reinvent their roster all over again. So that's a challenge, you know. But I do think, you know, Baylor is going to be, you know, have a very compelling product. You know, we heard the interviews, the exit interviews. I don't think, you know, they could have had better chemistry on and off the court. You know, these guys, you know, truly cared about playing together. You know, Scott Drew is emotional as we've ever seen him in a post-game interview, talking about how much he loved these guys and, you know, the chemistry they had. I was there with them in France. You could see it. These guys loved each other. They were a brotherhood, and you know, I think that's going to really help retention-wise keep who you want to keep. You know, I don't think people are leaving because of chemistry issues. It's only going to be because of playing time opportunities. But, you know, I do think that you can, you know, bring in the right culture fits and really try to create what you had, you know, when you made that national championship you know, run in 21 and would have in 2020 as well. And then you had the pieces to do it the next year is 22, just injury, bad luck with injuries. But so are you of the impression, you know, you think Eve, you know, even though he, I mean, let's be honest, he laid an egg in the NCAA tournament. Do you think that affects him at all? Or do you think he's definitely out? You think he's definitely gone?
I think he's definitely gone. Certain first round pick on most mocks. I think what he did to Hunter Dickinson and yep. Waco.
And Duke, he played extremely well against Duke at Madison yep. Square Garden. Yep.
Leaping ability, hasn't played basketball very long. I just think there's no real chance he comes back. Right. And I think that he's a little bit older, too, for his age.
Right.
And so I think the combination of all those things makes sense to say, try and make some team think we can teach Eve to hit a three or two. And Baylor developed him so well that he'll go pro. So I think I would put the odds 99.9% Jacoby is gone. I'd put them at about 99% that Eve is gone.
Yeah, those are pretty high odds. And then obviously we think that, you know, Ray J, Jalen, and we know Ray J and Jonathan Chalmachachu are out of eligibility. So the only question remains with Jalen Bridges, who does have that extra COVID year, I believe. That's right, isn't it?
He does. I think he yeah. redshirted one season too, I yes. want to say.
Yeah, so and then Caleb has that extra COVID year as well. So those are, you know, ones that have an opportunity to come back if they want to. That'll be interesting to watch. We're assuming Bridges is gone. So you need someone to replace Bridges. I don't think you're going to rely on Jason Azamota. As great of a prospect as he is, you're going to get a veteran guy there to replace what, you know, Bridges brought to the table. I think you need a starting center. I just don't feel confident personally in Josh Ojewunne being your starting center. If the coaches do, then, you know, great. But I don't think he put enough on paper to show that. I will say, you know, I looked over at the bench and he looked pretty nervous in that Clemson game. I know it's, you know, I know that these guys all know this is their opportunity to shine. And advancing in March is such a critical thing, you know, for their, you know, exposure. And I know that they feel awful about, you know, that opportunity that was squandered. But, you know, my point is he was just inconsistent. You know, he blocked a shot against Clemson, but we haven't seen that. We need a rim protector. And, you know, Clifford Amori would be like the kind of prototype that we need to start at center, in my opinion. And then I think, you know, you want an attack dog at the guard position, you know, someone that's going to be Mitchell or Akinjo-like, you know, someone that can really attack the ball. And then I think if you have that to pair with the other great guards that we have, you know, VJ Edgecombe may be that to some degree, but he's a freshman. So I think you're going to live with some ups and downs defensively. Rob Wright, I think, will be solid. You know, probably the most consistent of the freshmen coming in, even though VJ's got the higher upside and certainly looks like a more, you know, viable top five, you know, NBA pick, you know, type of player. But I do expect Rob Wright to be more consistent game to game than VJ Edgecombe. But, you know, Rob Wright's doesn't have that height, doesn't have that leaping ability. You know, he's a good athlete, not a freak athlete. So, you know, I think there's, you know, maybe a ceiling there that, you know, VJ Edgecombe has a much, much higher ceiling. Anyway, that's kind of what the roster looks like. And, you know, I think you're going to get, you know, transfer point guard or combo guard that's going to start. You're going to get a, you know, Jalen Bridges, you know, a type of player on the wing, and then maybe a starting center. And then, you know, I expect another transfer coming off the bench as well. And then we'll, you know, see how the rest of the roster unfolds. We haven't talked about Giannis Ndanja and Noah Boed, both coming off of injuries. So, you know, that'll be interesting to see what happens there, if they even, you know, come to Baylor next year or seek, you know, opportunities elsewhere, you know, for better playing time, because I think both of those, you know, unfortunately, because of the injuries, you know, that may really hurt their, you know, viability as far as, you know, what Baylor was looking at, you know, as far as their role on the team next year.
I think so too. And yeah, I don't really see, I don't know. I mean, those guys might decide to come to Waco, but there don't seem to be too many minutes for them next season. But they might say, hey, we're developmental guys who want to wait a little bit. But, you know, I don't know about that. I do know I'm very excited for the COVID years to end, because that's kind of warped everything.
Yeah.
And it's also just so funny to me that 2021 is the COVID year everybody got, when it was like, well, you played a full season that year. It wasn't, I think, did Marquette like maybe have to end their season, or somebody, I remember, ended their season at the NCAA tournament because they got COVID. but the other 63 or 67 teams all played. So I don't really know why 2021 was the COVID year and not
VCU?
The pretty good last season.
Was it VCU?
Yes, VCU.
Yes.
You're right. That might be why I was thinking Shaka, but he wasn't there yet, or he wasn't there
right.
still. But, yeah, I'm ready for the COVID years to end, and I'm also ready for the right to enter into contracts with some of these guys that you got to stay at a place 2 years if you want to get this kind of money.
Yeah. Well, it's a pretty chalky Sweet 16. You know, you're looking at the KenPom ratings. The only one outside the top 25 that's still alive is NC State. They've had a terrific run. It's been kind of the return of the big man in college basketball. You know, you look at NC State with Burns. You know, I mean, obviously they, because of Kentucky's losing to Oakland, you know, they only have to go through Texas Tech and you know, an injury, a team that, you know, was kind of trending a little bit down because of injuries with Texas Tech. And then Oakland, who had a terrific upset against Kentucky, but they end up, you know, losing in overtime to NC State. But you, Eddie Lampkin, you got Dane Danger, you know, we got Klingon for Connecticut. We got Baycott. I mean, it is kind of the return of the big man. And the big men are staying in college because they're not great NBA prospects. You know, Hunter Dickinson in Kansas, even though, you know, they exited the tournament early. What do you take on that? I mean, do you think Baylor needs to maybe look for that, you know, like a traditional low post big man? Is that a more valuable position in college basketball because these older guys are staying in college later and just, you know, really give you problems down low? On the offensive end, you know, they're terrific, but defensively they pose some challenges. You know, all those guys I mentioned aren't the best defenders.
No, and I think Connecticut has an awesome team around everybody they've got. Zach Edey is Purdue.
Yeah,
so Zach Edey's the one maybe exception, but if you can get a 7-4 guy, I would agree with you. Yeah, take the 7-4 guy who's got a little bit of skill over anything else. But even like Omar Ballo at Arizona, not really the focal point of those offenses. Armando Baycott, not UNC's best player. RJ Davis is. So I think it, once again, still is a sport of really talented guards. You know, Sheed is clearly the best player at Houston. I don't think there's anybody close on that roster. Not taking a shot at anybody, but I think he's clearly their best guard.
And Sharp's probably the second best player. I mean, Sharp has been terrific for them.
Yep.
I mean, Cryer's been good, but, you know, Sharp is a, you know, guy that's really come on, you know, as the season's gone along.
Yep, and Dalton Connect at Tennessee, Taman Lipsey at Iowa State. So, I mean, Filipowski's really good too, but a lot of these schools that are advancing, it's the guys that are guards that have been really good for them.
Right.
Or even big men like Anton Watson, the year Baylor won the title, just kind of played in the post. And then he lost a bunch of weight. Now he's really more of a wing than he is a post player. So I do think you kind of run into the Hunter Dickinson problem. If you just have a big man who posts up and you want to give him the ball all the time, it's hard to score around him. So I don't think that Baylor necessarily needs to get a big man like that. I do think it'd be – it's just – yeah, it makes me sad because I think Eve is going to be such a good pro in 2 or 3 years. And so I'm glad he came to Baylor. I think he was good for Baylor. But I do think they need somebody who's a little bit more switchable on the perimeter but can also block shots a little bit better, which is hard to find. But I think their combo big men, they haven't developed quite as well the last 2 years into multiple years as they might have liked.
Yeah. Clifford Amore. Remember the name. He's, I mean, three blocks a game. I think he was number 3 in the country in block rate. His offensive efficiency, Rutgers was number 4 in the country defensively. Yeah, Morey's listed at 6'11", 240, 104 offensive efficiency number. That's not very good. But, yeah, he was number 3 in KenPom block rate, 271 offensive rebounding percentage, number 80 defensive rebounding percentage. So he does some really good things. You know, I think he's a guy that, you know, Baylor could probably develop him offensively and, you know, turn him into you know, a player that's, you know, can hone his skills on the offensive end, but, you know, he's already ready-made defensively. He'd be the best defender we probably had since Freddie Gillespie for sure, but, you know, even Epi Udo, you know, would probably be the only one you could really compare him to. I mean, he would be a guy that could really, you know, make a huge difference in patrolling the paint for the Bears. So hopefully they get him or someone like that.
Yep, and then, Ashley, I think the final theory we maybe haven't discussed that the staff could look at, and I don't agree with this one, but I think the staff could legitimately debate, was it just injuries the last 3 seasons that decimated the team? And could Baylor have legitimately predicted they'd gotten guys that were injured? So 22, I think that's a legitimate case that You couldn't have predicted John would have that horrific injury. He doesn't. Team's a lot better. James Akinjo gets hurt. Adam's dealing with some pain at the end of the season. Obviously, LJ Cryer says he can't go at the end of the season. So you have all that going on. That, I think, is a good excuse for 2022. But still in 23 and 24, you can say, you know, John wasn't quite back in 2023, didn't play him in 2024. As well in 2023, Adam was banged up sometimes. I don't think the injuries were quite as pronounced.
You lose Langston Love to an eye injury. Yeah.
You do. So I think you could say, oh, if, you know, Langston's there, does that change the Creighton game? I don't think it does, but 24, and Keontae was hobbled with his ankle at the end
of
the season.
Yes.
And then in 24, obviously this season, you could look at it and say Eve's back slash ribs might have been bothering him more at the end of the season, which is why he put up two poor performances after being so good at the end of the year against KU and Texas. You know, Langston Love out yet again. You add those all together, that really makes you a worse team than you would have been without those injuries. So those injuries impact you enough that you look at that crew and say, well, is this back-to-back Sweet 16s, maybe you get an Elite Eight in one of those years? Is the philosophy almost all right? Just this team would have peaked in March the last two seasons with it being young, but because of injuries didn't peak. I don't know that I agree with that take, but what's your thought on that theory being promulgated and the staff debating it?
Yeah, injuries are a part of the game, hard to predict. You know, there's other teams that are advancing that are dealing with injuries. I just, you know, I think that overall, you can only make eight or nine guys happy. So I understand that it's hard, you know, to have guys on your roster that are, you know, likely going to be disgruntled, you know, that are good enough to play. And if they're not playing, they're going to be disgruntled. But it's a fine balance because you have to have some guys that are good enough to come in if you have that injury to a Langston Love or you know, an LJ Cryer or a Jonathan. You know, the 22 team is kind of the exception because you got multiple guys that were hurt at the end of the year. And, you know, that was, I think, a team, obviously, with the number one seed that you know, probably should have made a pretty good run that year. But then the last 2 years, you know, we had flaws. So there just wasn't the margin for error, you know, especially, you know, defensively. We knew that we were, you know, very erratic on that end of the court. And because of that, you know, you just, when you're banged up a little bit and you're out of rhythm offensively, you know, just it makes a difference, you know, and we just weren't good enough to, you know, grind out a game when you're shooting 6 for 24 from three and 62% from the free throw line. We just didn't have the defensive capability to do that. Whereas 2 years ago, 3 years ago, yeah, you win those games. I mean, Villanova was kind of that game, if I remember, in the tournament in 2021. You know, we were, you know, pretty poor offensively that game. And I'm going to go back and look at the stats, you know, to verify this. But, yeah, that game's 62-51. I mean, we're at 1.09 points per possession offensively, but we hold Villanova to 0.89. And, you know, halftime score, you know, we score 23 points in that first half. And we win that game. Because
3 of 19 from 3 as well.
Yeah, 3 of 19. We only shoot 10 free throws. We got 9 assists, you know, only 9 assists on the game. But we took care of the basketball, only 6 turnovers. We turned them over 16 times. If you remember, I think there was a time in that second half where we just turned that pressure up defensively. And I think they had 5 straight possessions with turnovers, if memory serves me right. So, you know, and that was a pretty good Villanova team. Justin Moore, Jeremiah Robinson Earl. You got, you know, Jermaine Sandals, Samuels, Colin Gillespie was injured, so that was a big loss for them. But I mean, you know, we went in there and just really, you know, took it to them down the stretch. And Davion just, you know, refused to let that team lose that game. You know, he was just driving to the hoop and getting easy buckets at the hoop. And, you know, I mean, it's we need that. We need guys that can do that. If you watch that A&M game against Houston, you know, even though they had Sharp and Cryer foul out, when the game was on the line, you know, Shed break, you know, he splits a double team, gets to the lane, jump stop, you know, hook shot, you know, like a floater in the paint, and that was the ball game. I mean, that was the key play that won Houston that game. And, you know, that stuff that Davion could do, I just don't think we had a player that could do that. You know, Ray J played his butt off, had a great final game, you know, as far as production offensively. But, you know, to have a guy like that who can just go get you a bucket when you need it and get tough buckets against tough defense, we just had times where we couldn't do that this year.
No, I agree. And I'm losing my mind right now, actually. Guess how many guys that played minutes for Villanova in that game still played college basketball this season?
Well, Eric Dixon was one of them. Justin Moore. Is Cole Swider still playing college basketball somewhere?
No, he's gone.
Okay. Oh, yeah, that'd be freshman. Chris, was Chris?
Yep, Arch was still around as well.
Yep.
And then Brian Antoine apparently still plays basketball at Radford.
What? That's crazy. Yeah. Yeah,
it's because Justin Moore and Arch Diacono started that game. Still played on Villanova's team this year. Then Eric Dixon played some that game, played a lot the next year. I mean, that's crazy to think that that team didn't make the NCAA tournament. And you had two starters that led the national champion at halftime.
Yeah, and Jonathan Chalmachach was the only one for Baylor that was on that roster. Yeah. Yeah, those COVID years are funny things for sure.
Yeah, if Jay Wright were still coaching, I think he would have had a group in the national championship there. Which goes to show you why you want to keep good coaches.
God we have Scott Drew. And we've talked about this, you know, multiple places on pods. We talked about on the message boards. I do think he's, you know, locked up at Baylor, you know, until I don't think he'll go anywhere else. I think he'll retire at Baylor. But I also do think he probably has a shorter window because of all the challenges of the job. I mean, you're coming off a crushing loss. Do you have any time to reflect on the season, you know, visit with your team? And, you know, you're hitting the transfer portal next day. Like you're like going, you know, 90 to nothing, you know, for about 3 or 4 weeks to try to remake your roster. And then you're having to re-recruit your players. You're having to manage NIL budgets. I mean, it is the game has changed and it's harder. You're seeing coaches step away from it earlier. Legendary guys step down. You know, I do think that, you know, Scott's, you know, probably has a shorter window here than people think. You know, maybe I could see him easily retiring before he's age 60. So enjoy him while we got him. And hopefully we can, you know, have some, you know, a couple more runs at the national championship here. But I think that, you know, he's going to be a Baylor Bear. So I think we can rest easy. Even if the Kentuckys, North Carolinas and Dukes come calling, I feel pretty confident that, you know, he's got a good thing going. And I do think Foster is huge. I mean, you know, the one thing you can complain about now, if you're Scott Drew, and it would be a valid criticism, is that, you know, you don't get a fan base that, you know, fills those neutral arenas, you know, like the other, you know, big schools do. But, you know, in the big scheme of things, I think you can overcome that. I think you can, you know, win in those environments, especially if you can, you know, get those higher seeds and Foster really gives you that opportunity. I mean, you should go undefeated at home. I mean, that should be a goal that, you know, we become like a Kansas and go undefeated at home every year. Houston did it. Iowa State did it, right? Those are the only two schools that did it this year.
Yes, because KU lost to BYU, but yep. KU, even with their more mediocre team than usual, still
only
came
one
close,
loss. Yep.
Yeah, and Baylor nearly did it. I mean, overtime against Houston, triple overtime against TCU.
Right,
so
right.
I think that's very doable for Baylor. I also do think, and, you know, people can be like, oh, you got to take a shot at football. Obviously a big season for football, but I think some people will kind of gravitate toward basketball if this is a 4-8, 5-7 type season.
Yeah,
where there's, you know, to me, you can spend your money however you want. I'm not telling people how to spend their money. I know, actually, you, as a financial planner, are not giving advice right now when I tell people how to spend their money. So not financial advice from Ashley, not legal advice from me. Now we protected ourselves for all certifications we have. But I would say, you know, if it were me, would I want to, you know, make donations to watch a football team go 4-8, or would I want to go to Memphis, or will it even be better cities in the future to watch an NCAA tournament game? Well, for me, it's not a real hard call what I'd rather spend money on if I were a Baylor fan. I think that's probably the direction things will keep going. But we'll see. You know, it'd be great for Baylor to go 8-4, 9-3. And we'll kind of see what happens with basketball. Obviously, you have some insight into Scott's thinking. I think, though, there's a good chance that Scott will still be on a sideline at 70 because of how competitive he is. And I think he would just miss it too much.
Yeah.
If he stepped away. And you know,
the
I know
job
Jay
will
Wright
have to get
it.
Easier. The job will have to get easier. Yeah. Like right now, I bet he's like, oh my gosh, this is the work life balance isn't there. But I mean, may,
you
know,
give him another Final Four, he'll think about it, I think. And
re-energize.
I think it's one of those deals too where if you get two national titles, you don't rest thinking, oh, I got two, I'm set. I think you think if you're him, well, Jay Wright didn't get three, Bill Self didn't get three. And then you really gun for, I want to get three titles. So I think he's one of those guys that will always grind for it. But I don't think he'll be – I do would agree with you, actually. If you ever hit the Tom Izzo wall, where every single time I watch a Tom Izzo press conference, the guy just looks miserable. And then I remember reading an article, I think, from Dana O'Neill a few years back where she was like, yeah, he just is like, I'm singularly driven that I got to win a second title. And it's like, man, you haven't been to the national championship in 15 years. It's probably not happening at Sparty. So I don't think Scott would ever put himself in that position, but I'm thinking he's going to get to another Final Four and then think, all right, I did it again. I want to do it one more time. And so I think he's in it for the long haul. And I think the final trolling job we have to do, since we trolled Louisville so much, is to ask, is Kentucky poor? Because it seems clear they wanted to fire Cal. And Matt Norlander, I was listening to Ion College Basketball today, was talking to Parrish and saying that apparently Kentucky was – considering it, but that their AD would have to go to the Kraft family, and the Kraft family, I guess, was just like, we're not paying John Calipari $33 million to walk away. So I think Texas A&M needs to hang a banner for a national championship saying, you know, we out blue blooded the blue bloods by paying $70 million for Jimbo to go away when Kentucky couldn't even find a measly $33 million. So I think take down one of those fake Big 12 South Conference championship banners you have at Kyle Field, put this one up at Kyle Field to say richer than Kentucky basketball. That's as good as anything they've done since 1939 at Texas A&M. And so I think, you know, big accomplishment to Kentucky, big accomplishment to A&M. And I'm sorry to hear Kentucky is poor. And we know Louisville's coaching search was poor after they swung and missed. So if you're driving through Kentucky, watch out for people panhandling, because there are probably a lot of panhandlers in Lexington and Louisville now.
Hey, yeah. A&M is not the most parsimonious school in the world. Do you know that word, parsimonious? Has that ever crossed your radar before?
You know, it has sometimes, Ashley, but I don't think I've seen parsimonious in like 5 years.
Frugal would be a good way to put that. Yeah, no, I think good point. And I just remember, you know, listening to some podcasts. You know, I listen to almost all the college basketball podcasts, and they'll have John Calipari on there, and he'll say, well, you know, we know Kentucky picks first. I mean, we pick first whenever we want to. And, you know, transfer portal, you know, whoever we want in the recruiting rankings, we always pick first. I mean, there's kind of an arrogance that he says, you know, that with. And it's been tough times for them. Big Blue Nation is not happy with Calipari. And seems like a marriage that is not going to last, but it's going to be one more year. So we'll see how they do. But, you know, I'm sure he's going to probably overreact and go the you know transfer portal route as well, but he does have commitments from freshmen like the Bears do. I do think going forward, you know, I've said this on our message board thread, you know, I know the one name that I'd kind of keep an eye on for 25 is Koa Pete, but you know other guys, I don't know. I think we're gonna probably, you know, look at maybe one or two freshmen, you know, going forward instead of, you know, the three, you know, or so, and that you're probably going to be, you know, more reliant on the transfer portal and less reliant on freshmen. But mixing in that super NBA talent can pay dividends. And I think there's still validity for doing that. But having two or three may not be the recipe that you're hoping for. I think teams are discovering that. And I think, you know, you'll want like, veterans to, you know, mix around a special NBA talent. So I see Baylor going more that route than, you know, relying on multiple freshmen. You know, last year, you know, it was Keontae George really the only one they were kind of relying on, right? He was the only freshman they relied on last year.
Yep.
Yeah. And then this year, of course, Eve and Jacoby, you know, Miro played a little bit, but, you know, Jacoby and Eve are the two guys that you played a lot. And I think going into the season, they thought John would be healthier. So I think they, you know, figured John would be a starter and would give you, you know, pretty good production, but his nerves just never regenerated. And, You know, so, I mean, they knew that was a risk, but, you know, it just worked out the way it worked out. Well, we've gone 50 minutes. Let's put an end to it. You've been listening to a final recap on the season with Ashley Hodge and Kendall Cout, Sic 'em Bears.